See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us.
That's how we can get you, Barbara.
Got a death curse.
It was a shark.
Little pig, let me come in.
Go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us, as always, is Catherine Horan. I almost said super fan.
I know.
Unfortunately.
No super fan.
Yeah. There is no super fan this time. He got stuck at work and he's not going to be able to join us. So no, we're super fanless tonight. And
but that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. It's totally fine.
Because actually, in my opinion, we've come out ahead because we've got another guest.
Oh, right. We are definitely ahead. That's right.
Yeah.
So our replacement for Mark today, although it wasn't really a replacement because we didn't know, we actually thought Mark was going to be here with him, but turns out it's a replacement, is Benjamin Snyder. Do you go by Benjamin or Ben? Do you rather have us call you?
Either or. Benjamin's fine. People call me that.
All right. Well, Benjamin is the host of the Real Beans podcast. And if you have not listened to it, Mark has done one episode so far, right?
Yes.
And then Joe and I just recorded an episode with you guys. And I think Mark also recorded something that hasn't come out yet or something like that. Okay. So Joe and I, and this is perfect timing because it's going to be coming up not next week, but the following week, right? If I'm not mistaken.
The
23rd. So, and that will be a show devoted to Raiders of the Lost Ark. And we talk a little bit about the other indie movies, but mostly it's Raiders of the Lost Ark. And Joe and I are, you know, we are official fans. We are true Raiders of the Lost Ark fans, right? Joe,
I like to say world-renowned fans.
World-renowned, that's true. I mean, we are world. Yeah,
one of the things we're known for, worldly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's really not something that Mark is known for, right? He's known for what is he known for?
Never.
Not being able to pronounce IMDb,
mm-hmm.
or most of the English language.
that's true.
He's not known for being able to assemble a spinning wheel. Yeah,
that's that's true. And he is not a true fan of Raiders of the Lost Ark, so he wasn't invited to record with us. He desperately was trying to get us to ask you to let him on the show for that episode, but then none of us would get to speak, and he would have talked over all of us. And
with an epic movie like that, you don't have time for a fly-by-night fan who's barely seen it.
Well, we wouldn't have had time to explain to him.
Explain the plot to him, yeah.
Right, or who Steven Spielberg is, that whole thing. Like, it wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah, as a consolidary, secondary, my brain isn't working. I'm playing Mark because he's not here.
There you go.
You're doing a good job.
Yeah,
so
you need a shot of Malort.
To make him feel better, I drug him on Real Beans to talk about Top Gun.
Ah.
And that would come out around... Yeah.
I mean, as a consolation?
The there you go, consolation. Yeah. That's the word I'm looking for.
There you go.
It was a long day, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, I think it's you can either be a true fan of Raiders of the Lost Ark or a true fan of Top Gun, but I don't think you can be both. Right.
Yeah. The two should meet. Yeah.
Nary the two should meet. Yeah. So we are very happy to have you here, Benjamin. And it's great to talk to you on our end. You're in our domain now. So watch yourself.
You see, on Ben's podcast, we'd be drinking coffee.
That's
to
true.
Pair with our movies. But you're in our domain. So we're all going to be drinking Malort all night long.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, no, yeah. We did that one already.
We already did
that. I did offer to share some of my leftover bottle with him.
And for those of you who did get a chance to listen to the Malort episode, I have to apologize to all of you for my behavior. I have not
just
been,
for the last half.
I have not been that drunk in quite some time, and I came to realize that the shot glass I was using, and I think it's around here somewhere, was actually a double.
So that's even double. Bigger bragging rights.
I get. Yeah. Is that what we would call that? I've already misplaced it. I know it was here.
And here it is 2 weeks later. Yeah. And you finally just sobered up.
And I still have the shot glass on my desk. That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, here it is. This is actually,
that's a double.
That's a double. And so that's my bad. So.
Yeah, it was your bad.
That was my bad. And unfortunately, you know, some of it, you have to watch the episode on YouTube in order to really get the gist of it, because we didn't explain a lot of that. I noticed while I was kind of looking through the footage, there were things that happened on camera that we just assumed everyone was seeing. And so if you're listening to the podcast, the whole part of the wheel falling off and everything, you don't get quite the grasp of it until you watch the video of that happening.
Or
so
Shannon's amazing outfit changes.
Oh yes,
those are great.
Yeah. Or the fact
I almost
that they
wore
look,
the same outfit.
The two of them look oddly like they're related. All right. Joe, what do we got?
Because I've been so busy in the past 2 weeks, I haven't really watched much, but I did finally finish watching FX from 1986. I don't have my cheaters on. I think it's 1986 with Brian Brown and Brian Dennehy, the Brian brothers. It's a nostalgic movie for me. I can't tell you how many times I've watched it and rewatched it, you know, when I was a kid. But it's about a special effects wizard who's hired by federal agents to fake a mobster's assassination, only to realize he's been set up as a scapegoat. And he actually killed the guy. And now the same government that hired him is trying to hunt him down and kill him.
It's a good movie.
It is. It's a very good movie. I'm 100% genuine. People should watch this movie if they haven't seen it.
Yeah. No, it's I haven't seen it in quite some time, but I do remember when I watched it, I was shocked by how good it is.
It's on Tubi now, if anybody wants to watch it.
God bless Tubi.
And then speaking of, so this one is a joke. I had never heard of this. I've never seen it. I discovered it today, and I have to watch it. A movie from 1995 with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Jesus.
And I'm just going to set this up. Darren McCord is the fire marshal for the Pittsburgh Civic Arena, and he finds himself in a race against time to save his daughter, the vice president of the United States, and a crowded stadium while terrorists take over at the NHL Stanley Cup finals.
God.
So he works for the Pittsburgh Penguins while they're in the NHL Stanley Cup finals, the Penguins versus the Blackhawks. And it's Die Hard in an ice rink. And
with
it looks
John,
so unbelievably
Jean-Claude
good.
With Van
Jean-Claude
Damme.
Van Damme. Yes. Yeah. I've never even heard of this film, but it is so far up my alley. I can take
what's it called?
It's called Sudden Death. Because, you know, it's the game goes
hockey
into sudden death. Yeah. Yeah. So I have not watched that, but I swear by the next time we do an episode, I would have watched it.
Yeah. All right.
So that's it. I really haven't watched anything else.
Yeah. Catherine, anything for you? Nothing?
Just the Burrows.
Getting
enjoying
closer
and closer. By the time this airs, I will have finished it. But yeah, really enjoying it. The cast is fantastic. Like, everyone in that show is just amazing. I really like the storylines.
Ben, have you seen any movies or watched anything recently that you care to share?
Yeah, I just saw last week Backrooms.
How did you like it?
I loved it. It was quite a fun horror film. A lot to think about afterwards. I think there was a lot, the way it was shot just made me feel nostalgic for some reason. The way the rooms were laid out was reminding me of the dead malls that you'd see at the back rooms. And of course that crazy pirate thing running around after everybody was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because I knew I'd be coming onto the podcast, I did watch The Greasy Strangler.
How did you like it?
So I was in the camp of Joe and Catherine, unfortunately.
Oh,
no, fortunately.
Unfortunately. I had hoped that it was going to be I was like going in with an open mind. I knew it was split down the middle, and I was like, okay, where am I going to fall in this category? And
Split down the middle anymore. Between you right. and friend of the show, Brian, I mean, it's pretty weighted.
Yeah.
But my love for it is so strong, Joe. I love it as much as two men.
Yeah.
But I can.
I think you just love two men.
I do. Those two men that are in it, those bullshit artists, I love them. Yeah. Oh, it's one of my favorite things I've found this year. It like rejuvenated me. Well, that just about killed me. That just about killed me. All right. Well,
the Malort.
Yeah, the Malort. Christian Slater, that was a double Clean whammy. Slater Christian Slater and movies Malort, yeah. and then Malort movies or Malort.
Malort movies.
Malort movies. Yeah. So, well, I guess we'll do, because, you know, I've got nothing else to say. By the time this airs, I will hopefully have finished Widow's Bay, which I cannot, again, keep harping on this, but I cannot recommend this movie enough. This thing is just TV show. It is just the best thing on TV right now. So you've got to watch it. If you haven't, it's on Apple TV. So terrific, terrific. And it gets the comedy and the horror just right. And I think because the comedy isn't broad, it's more quirky comedy, I guess, than anything. But when it goes horror, it's very serious, full on horror. So, and sometimes the two are very intermixed. Like the episode with the hag was comedic because of the way that she supposedly dispatches her victims. I won't give anything away because it's a hilarious part of the show.
That one was pretty damn funny.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's also terrifying. Like, she was a scary character. Yeah. So I've never seen a movie or a show or a movie or anything that is comedy horror. I would say it leans more toward horror than comedy, but I've never seen anything like this that got both sides just right. And the comedy's funny. The horror is scary. So bravo to them. If you haven't watched it, check it out. So I think that brings us to our pick, and that is, what's it called again?
Before they were famous.
Before they were famous. That's right. So Ben, this was your pick. So I guess you can lead us through it if you'd like.
All right. So I had the thought of when you invited me on the show, I had this thought of these major superstars that we have today and where they got their start. I thought it'd be kind of fun because many of them start off in horror films because that's the one way of actually getting work sometimes. I have a friend who started off in horror films as well. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to find a few films that I had seen, but also a couple that I had not seen, and came up with the three of the films here, which were Cutting Class, which has Brad Pitt in it, Return to Horror High, which has George Clooney, and Psycho Beach Party, which has Amy Adams in it.
Yeah. I guess we could just start off. And you guys have any care about where we start off?
No.
Let's start randomly? with, Let's just start with, I'm looking at the first thing I have highlighted, Psycho Beach Party. Let's start off with that.
Okay.
This one, I had not seen any of these movies, actually. Had any of you guys seen these before?
No, I hadn't heard of most of them.
I've seen Cutting Class.
Oh, you had?
Yeah.
I had heard of Cutting Class, and I knew Brad Pitt was in it, but I'd just never seen it. But I may have heard of Psycho Beach Party.
I knew of Psycho Beach Party because it's a play. And we did it in my hometown once upon a time.
That kind of makes sense, I guess. Sort of makes sense.
That really makes sense. It's
a play, and a lot of the women's roles are usually played by men.
Yeah, or at least the sheriff.
Yes.
Yes. And that was the playwright.
Okay. I didn't know that either.
Oh, yeah, I did not know that.
Yeah. When Charles Bush wrote the screenplay to this, he was like, I'm a little too old to be seen as a teenage kid, so where it's much easier on the stage to portray something like that, because it's more, you can be bigger on the stage and not so on the camera. So he decided to write this character that's not in the play, so he could have a part in it, and then wrote the screenplay as well. But yeah, this is, I had seen this film before. I'd read the play and thought it'd be kind of fun. I did warn everybody that it was a kind of a different type of film before going in on this. Not your typical horror film, because it's more satire than an actual horror film, but there are some horror elements in, and because it satirizes both the Gidget and Beach Blanket Bingo films with Frankie and Annette from the 60s, it also goes into those 1950s sci-fi horror kind of over-the-top cheesy monster films.
Right.
So there's a nice connection with the two of them. And then having the lead character have split personalities whenever seeing something going off, and is she the killer? Is she not the killer? There's just a lot of fun with this film and the play as well. So,
yeah. Yeah, this is, it's from 2000, directed by Robert Lee King.
Are we spoiling this?
Yeah.
I don't see why not. 26 years old. Okay.
Yeah, I don't see why not. And this is, let's see. Chicklet is a 16-year-old tomboy who's desperate to be part of the in-crowd of Malibu beach surfers. She's the typical American girl, except for one little problem. Her personality is split into more slices than a pepperoni pizza. it's great to see Nicholas Brendon. And of course, he just passed away recently, so it was kind of interesting to see him. Of course, Lauren Ambrose is in it. So it's not just Amy Adams before they were famous. Lauren Ambrose is in it, and this is pre 6 Feet Under, I believe. Yeah, I mean, 6 Feet Under, I think, still didn't come out for a few more years after this. And of course, Nicholas Brendon was deep into Buffy the Vampire Slayer at this time in 2000. They were probably on season 4 of that, which is one of my favorite shows. And of course, Amy Adams, this is before I think I'd seen her in anything. I think there was, when I was living in Chicago, maybe it was when I was living in Chicago, or maybe it was after that, I had been turning around the TV I think Mark and I might have been turning around the TV together looking, and we were looking on HBO and then Cinemax, and it was one of those late night movies with Cinemax, and Amy Adams was on one of those cheesy late night Cinemax movies, you know. That was the first time I'd seen her, and then all of a sudden I started seeing her in other things popping up, so it might have been after this, I'm not sure, but she's definitely, I think all the cast is giving it their all. What do you guys think of this one?
This was campy fun. I love the costumes. I love the 60s feel to everything. And you're right. I agree that everyone looks like they're having a good time. They're all, you know, committing to it 100%. I love how the character of Verdeen is finding deep meaning in all of the sci-fi cheesy horror movies. You know, she's finding the deeper meaning in all of them. I thought that was great. Yeah, this one was fun. It was campy. It's silly. And yeah, I went into it knowing what it was about, and so I wasn't kind of surprised by that, but it lived up to my expectation.
Yeah. What did you think, Joe?
I actually like this quite a bit. I never heard of it, didn't know anything about it, certainly didn't know it was a play. Now a lot of it makes more sense. Also, I wanted to point out, don't sleep on Beth Broderick, the woman that played the mother.
Yeah.
You may also recognize her from the mom from Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And she's a hell of a piece of eye candy, if you ask me. I love opening.
Yeah.
I love the opening movie that's playing at the drive-in, The Girl with Three Heads. That's just tremendous. Yeah,
that was great.
I almost wish they would have visited the drive-in theater a few more times throughout the film so we could see more of that girl with three heads. The green screen surfing scenes with these guys are so campy. They're hilarious.
They are funny. I loved it. Yeah, it's definitely a play on those old beach party movies for sure.
Yeah, I really love that. This is so mean, but it makes so much more sense now that I know that it was a stage play, that the girl that's in the wheelchair is like the bully.
Yeah.
You know, it's like she's got terrible, just daggering things to say about everyone.
Yeah.
And she's so mean and everyone's so nice they don't want to insult her back.
Yeah.
Oh, because she's in a wheelchair. Yeah, I love the all of the side characters in the group too, like the two buff beach boys that end up falling in love with each other, or at least discovering that they love each other. That's tremendous watching that blossom. And you got a bottomless Amy Adams for a brief couple of seconds. I can't really go wrong or complain about that. And then of course, you know, but it makes so much more sense now. I know it's a play. The ending, the killer, the trope, you know, it's always the foreigner. But it just, he's dropped so many breadcrumbs that it's him throughout the film.
Yeah.
Then when it finally is him, like as a standalone movie, that's dumb. But if this being part of a campy play, it's perfect. So this, I don't remember if I said this or not, but it reminds me a lot of The Love Witch.
Yeah. Yes.
I can see that.
You know, like they, in The Love Witch, they committed so much to that 1970s vampire film. And this one, they were just so spot on. I mean, even the Thomas Gibson with the Kanaka character.
Nick Kanaka.
I have very high praise for this film. I like this quite a bit. This was a huge surprise for me. So,
yeah. But what are your thoughts on it, Ben?
Well, I'm a huge fan of Charles Bush. I was in one of his plays back in college, and I get the whole, he really loves the golden age of Hollywood. Many of his characters are written to be like, you know, Joan Crawford and Betty Davis and in that vein. And then also satirizing a lot of the fads of the time during the movies. And I remember it'd been a while since I revisited this film, so there were a few things I forgot, such as who the killer was at the end, until I was like, oh, that's right. But I as we've mentioned before, I love the green screen moments because they're just so over the top and insane that, and everyone just looks like they're just having a blast. And just to go off of with Beth Broderick being the conservative but oversexed mother trying to get into, the exchange student's pants the entire time, but then also being like, you can't be around boys, get out of here, you, Florence, come with me, you know, being that prim and proper mother from the 50s who would have to drag the girl away from the boys. And then Amy is just hilarious as the bitchy queen of the group, and gives it all her. You can definitely see why she would go on to become a 6-time Oscar nominated actress, because she really like goes deeper, I think, than some of the others in terms of that character.
She's all in.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes this such a fun movie to just watch, because they're not taking themselves seriously. I probably could have done with maybe a bit more of the gore factor, but then I understand, you know, being that 50s.
There wasn't any horror movie. Yeah.
It's like all rubber and all that. And that's exactly what it was during that time period. So it makes sense. My only issue is the very final moment of the film. I'm not a huge fan of how the film ends after they discover who the killer is. I don't remember that in the play. So I think it might have just been added to the film to kind of like give another button at the end where we can just be like, oh, okay. So that one kind of, that part made me roll my eyes just a little bit, but you know, I can forgive it.
Yeah. I did like it. I thought it had some, I'm getting an echo, Ben, if you could mute a little bit, I'm getting a little echo. There we go. Yeah, there we go. I did like it too. I thought it was a lot of fun. It kind of reminded me of Beauty Queen Butcher, actually. I mean, not that this is a way better production than Beauty Queen Butcher was, but it kind of reminded me of, because of the character in drag. That's the only character in drag.
Ben, have you seen Beauty Queen Butcher?
No, I have not. I'll have to look for that.
I highly recommend
it on DVD.
That one.
I'll let you borrow.
Yeah, starring our very own Matt Speak.
So,
if you want to see Matt at his finest without drinking Malort, that's the place to find it.
Yeah. Let's see. But yeah, I think it's just a little shy of being like a real like banger, though. I think there's just a little. I don't know what it is. The sets are right. The acting seems right. Everything's right. But it's just a little off of being like a masterpiece or a classic to me. It was fun to watch. It's not one I'll probably seek out again, though. And I think it had the potential to be a really big time watch over and over kind of cult classic, and I think it's just not quite there. And I don't know if it's the pacing or the timing or what, but I feel like there's just a couple adjustments, and it would be a cult classic, but I think it would be a classic in general if it was just a little tighter. I'm not sure what. And I feel like we need Hawaiian shirts to be our new CineScare like uniform here, Joe. I kind of feel like we could make that into a CineScare uniform of some kind. I don't know. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
You like Hawaiian shirts?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I do too. I never wear them though. And
me neither.
And so I kind of feel like I like the way these guys looked in them. That I thought that the luau dance battle was just beautiful. That was one moment that I just really thought these people are having a blast making this movie. And Beauty Queen Butcher was like that. Beauty Queen Butcher, by the way, is a way worse movie than this. I think if Beauty Queen Butcher was edited down to about 90 minutes, because I think it's like 2-hour movie. If it was edited down to about 90 minutes or so, it would be really, really good, I think. But why did I compare it to Beauty Queen Butcher just now? What did I say?
Editing?
I don't know now. Beauty Queen Butcher, we had a blast making it, and you know, we had so much fun making. We didn't know what was going to come of it, but when we were done, we did have a blast making it.
And Beauty Queen Butcher comes in at an hour 58.
Yeah. Yeesh. Yeah. That movie has no business being any more than like 80 minutes long.
It can barely stand the 58.
Yeah, exactly. But let's see. It's like, I think the guy was trying to present himself as a doctor, and somebody said, you know, he's like, he'd taken 3 semesters at Northwestern. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's what makes you into a doctor. So anyway, yeah, definitely check out, I think, Psycho Beach Party, especially if you're into really campy. You know, I don't know if you can call this a spoof. It's definitely not. It plays on the tropes of the 50s beach party, but not in a way that makes fun of them. It just is. It's a modern, well, a 2000s version of one of those movies. It's playful with the tropes, but I don't know if
homage?
an homage, maybe. Yeah, maybe an homage. Yeah, it's certainly not a spoof, I don't think, or a, you know, anything like that. But if you're into campy kind of this kind of campy humor like this, I think you'll enjoy it. So let's move on to, how about we do Return to Horror High?
All right.
Get ourselves a little George Clooney. And not only George Clooney, but Philip McKeon, who I had completely forgot about. He was on Alice. He played the son on Alice. Ben, talk to us a little bit about this. What did you think of this one? And had you seen this one before?
So I had seen this film before, maybe about 20 plus years ago. I remember when I was first getting into horror films, my dad, brother, and I decided to rent it because I was taken in by the cover art, which was the cheerleader skeleton jumping up in the air with the pom-poms. And being a younger kid at the time, it kind of freaked me out a little bit, the way it was just staring right at you in your face. They ended up changing the cover art to make it more kind of funnier, and that didn't work so well. It didn't seem to work, but that's what drew me into this movie originally. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a fun, you know, teenage slasher movie set in a high school. And I was wrong, kind of, because this poor film seems to be wanting to do so much.
Yeah,
and it becomes very confusing. I think rewatching it, I was actually surprised I remembered so many of the scenes and being like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh yes. And, you know, I think probably some of that nostalgia makes it a little better viewing for me. But I do recognize that the fact that there's three plot lines kind of going on at the same time, not quite weaved together, it does leave the viewer being like, I'm not exactly sure what's present day, past, or what's the movie being made, because you've got the murders that occurred in the early 80s, then you have the film crew coming in to make a movie about the murders, and then, as we see at the very beginning, it's the police finding all the corpses of the movie crew, complete with Marcia Brady, Maureen McCormick, who seems to be having a blast. She seems to be the one that's in on the joke. Like, I feel like that because this film doesn't quite know if it wants to be a comedy horror or if it wants to be a full-blown creepy slasher movie, it kind of you see the best of both worlds, I suppose, in this. But my favorite scene in the whole movie is the biology dissection scene with the biology teacher, because the way it's not scary, but it's like fun to watch, because you have this like rock and roll score playing behind him, and then you have the scream like killer in a mask coming out to just go to town, and you hear in the background the, as we had seen previously, the teacher talking about how to dissect the frog, and you just hear the echoing of that same recording that we hear while the murderer is going after the biology teacher. So that scene, I was like, I wish there had been more of that type throughout the film. And of course, George Clooney's in it for like 2 seconds. He's the first one to get knocked off, but he does have a pretty creepy moment, the way that it's shot down the hallway with sort of the dark lights and kind of fog in the area. So yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's not a great film, and definitely don't judge. This is one of those don't judge the movie poster by, but don't judge the movie by its movie poster, because it'll not be exactly what you're expecting.
There were no skeleton cheerleaders in this movie.
No, they were just the would have been cool if there was at the very end,
right? Oh.
Yeah. Joe, what are your thoughts on Return to? And I do like you mentioned, I do remember that, seeing that video cover at the video store. I do remember seeing that at Blockbuster or wherever. It does jump out at you for sure. Joe, what are your thoughts on Return to Horror High?
I'm in the exact same boat. I remember walking right by that artwork in the video store as a kid all the time. Never saw it until, you know, this assignment. I will say that this movie should be judged on sections. of the film, not as its entirety. Because as on a right. whole, the movie is very confusing.
Extremely. Yeah.
But I liked so many certain individual parts of the film. Just collectively, it doesn't make sense. Starting with the very opening, the scrolling bloody text titles and the really creepy music. The music in this film is great. 10 out of 10 for the opening sequence, wholeheartedly. And then we go into Maureen McCormick dressed as a cop. Yes, please. I'll take that all afternoon. And then we've got George Clooney, who I loved. He was going to quit the movie because he was going to star in a TV series that's a ripoff of Miami Vice and Moonlighting. That's something I'd like to see.
Yeah, no kidding.
And the George Clooney death is great. The music in that scene is great. Alex Rocco, he's so good at it, but he plays the exact same character in every film. He's just a Jewish Hollywood bigwig, and he's sleazy as all get out. And I really have to question this. I don't know how a briefcase phone works, but they use that throughout the film several times. Like, they got to put the briefcase down, they got to open up the lid, and then you pick up a corded phone, put it to your ear, and somehow that works. I'd love to do some more research on that. I have this note here. I kind of remember. I always wonder what 1750 plus tip would get me. Was there like a hooker in this film or something?
I don't know.
Can't remember what 1750 plus tip was. Anyway, there was a scene where the entire crew came out of one bathroom stall. Were they all like crammed in there like a clown car smoking pot or something? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
I've got a couple notes about the smarmy biology teacher. He's a dick. He's berating his student relentlessly exactly in front of the entire class. Yeah. I didn't really like the scream-like mask it just seemed like somebody whipped something together at the last minute because something else didn't work. I was kind of hoping Mark was here just so I could read this one note. The guy that played the principal was also one of the teachers in Pump Up the Volume, starring Kirsten Slater.
God.
Just because Mark would appreciate that.
Yeah.
and then, you know, we had Death by Javelin, which is awesome. You don't see that every day.
No.
And then, of course, my favorite was you've got Marsha Brady dressed as a cop, covered in blood, and eating a hot dog all in one scene.
Yep. She seemed like she had a murder boner going on or something.
She was like rubbing the blood all over and everything. Yeah. Like if I had that on VHS, I don't know if you could still watch that scene. I probably would have eroded it. And then my big question is at the end of the movie, so did anybody die in this film?
That is the question.
Yeah, that is the question.
I don't know.
I'm so confused.
Body count, but is it really a body count? Yeah.
I think I'm just going to make a super cut of just the Maureen McCormick parts.
There you go.
And just watch those over and over again.
It'd be like a 5-minute movie.
Oh, yeah. That's all I need.
Yeah. That's all I need.
So, yeah.
Catherine. Sorry. Did you have something else?
No, that was it. That was all done.
Okay. Catherine, what are your thoughts?
So very similar to what Joe was saying. I loved how it started. I love the opening credits. And I love that it said starring in pieces. I thought that was clever. I was surprised when George Clooney died. I was like, wait, he's the first one to go? That can't be right. I was wondering why the actress Callie, every time she's walking around, she's wearing a bathrobe.
Yeah, I noticed that. And then it was hard to remember who she was.
Right?
Because she plays three a bunch of different
people.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like,
kind of like the wife and the dentist.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
And she's the only one who played three different parts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was very confusing.
But I love the scene when she's on the date with the football player. And she was just calling out all the horror tropes. And, you know, like, why is it the women are always the one doing this? And why is it the men? You know, just, I loved her rant there. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to read my handwriting. kissing scene with a welder in the background. I don't remember what that means.
Yeah, the welding guys. I have that as a note too. What was up with that? They were in the bedroom, or they were in a bedroom, and they were, I think they were hiding from the killer or something like that. But then they're watching some guys welding outside. No. I can't remember what the deal was there.
Yeah. So, and then, the one quote I wrote down was, "There's one chair left. It's for you."
God, and the crazy scene at the end.
The janitor is wearing a mask the whole time. I didn't understand that at all.
Oh yeah,
I was like, wait, that can't. What? Okay,
and that actor's acting like him. Like, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, right, that was bizarre. But yeah, I mean, it's not a great movie, but it's a fun movie. Like, I enjoyed watching it. It doesn't make any sense, and I don't know what I saw, but I had a good time watching.
Yeah, I, what's the actor's name? Alex Rocco, you know, from The Godfather. He does always play the same type of character, either Italian or mafia kind of guy, or, you know, it's what he does. I can't imagine him playing something else. But I always just picture him as Mo Green. You know, he'll always be Mo Green. Obviously, that's the best part he had. Philip McKeon.
What? I always remember him as the head of Playtone Records from That Thing You Do.
No one has seen that movie more times than you, Joe. I'm pretty sure there's no one else.
I'm going to mute myself now.
It did. I think that another one, this is also one that looks like they had a blast making it. I have a feeling they had an absolute party making this movie. And then at a certain point, the killer drops a body into what looks like a litter box, a big litter box in the middle of the floor. I have no idea what that thing is. It just looks like litter, but it obviously goes, like, the whole body goes down there. So I'm like, what's holding the litter up? If the guy can go all the way down through it, what's holding the litter up? Or whatever that stuff is that was in there that looked like litter. But the movie within a movie within a movie thing was so confusing. It was really like, I have a feeling they got all this footage and then they did not know. Like, I think they had they had to have had an idea of what they were trying to do, but in the editing of it, I have a feeling there were a lot of messes with the making of this movie. And I have a feeling it was supposed to get wrapped up in a more clever way than it did, probably. And I don't know, it didn't work. Yeah, the welding guys, I had no idea what was happening there. And then the cop says at one point, well, my guess is they dragged the body, hacked it up, and flushed it. What a cop. Like, that's your explanation? They flush a body down the... You know how long it would take to hack up a body enough to flush it all the way down a toilet? Like, that would be hard to do.
I mean, that cop is, like, so deadpan the entire time. Yes. He just has no emotion, it seems like.
Yeah. And yet again, another horror movie trope, bungling cops. Mm-hmm. They're just all over the place. And then, yeah, the mask part with the janitor was just ridiculous. It made no sense whatsoever. None at all. No. So, this is one I won't return to for sure. No.
You won't be returning to Horror High.
I will not be returning to the return to Horror High, but I'm glad I watched it. It was kind of fun, to check out. And
can I jump in just real quick for one more scene that I one cut that I thought was really, really well done in terms of the editing process? There's a sequence where one of the actors gets pulled in by a noose or a lasso or something. It's tied up and it starts the triggering of the propeller that heads towards him, and you see it just coming towards him. And then when it's supposed to hit him, it cuts to the director throwing blood, or Alex Rocco's character throwing blood onto the wall saying, "We need more blood," without actually seeing I thought that was a clever
cut. It was very good, very well done.
Yeah, that was a good cut. See, there were pieces of this that just it was really strong, and it got, I don't know, something happened in the production of this that it didn't, either they didn't get the footage they needed or they ran out of money. I don't know what, but it they weren't able to make it, I think, what they probably wanted to make it into. All right, well, that brings us to our last movie, and that is Cutting Class. And this one is from 1987 as well, right?
89.
Okay. Yeah. Cutting Class. And I think I'd heard of this in relation to Brad Pitt being in it, but I was certainly not aware of it when it came out. This is directed by Rospo Pallenberg, and it's the only movie he directed, shockingly enough. But the story of this is high school student Paula Carson's affections are being sought after by two of her classmates, Dwight, the bad boy, and Brian, a disturbed young man who has just been released from a mental hospital where he was committed following the suspicious death of his father. Soon after being released, more murders start happening. Is Brian back to his old tricks, or is Dwight just trying to eliminate the competition? So I'll start us off with this one. Is this our first Martin Mull movie, Joe? I don't think we've ever watched a movie with Martin Mull.
You are correct, sir.
It is arguable whether he was actually in this movie or not. We keep cutting back at the very beginning of the movie. It starts out with him hunting. Well, it starts out with him saying goodbye to his daughter or whatever, but then he goes hunting. And then someone shoots him with an arrow in the leg. And we think he's dead, but then we come back. The movie keeps cutting back to him every now and then, and as he's trying to get home. And I don't know how long this movie, I guess I didn't think about how long the span of this movie was, but it felt like several days. So he was trekking through whatever it was for several days with an arrow wound coming out of his leg. I don't understand why that was necessary, except that it was a way to get the dad out of the house, maybe, I suppose, so that the daughter was more in a vulnerable position. But they could have solved that by just having him do a business trip or something like that, you know. But I don't know why it had to be that way. And then we kept cutting back to him. They even have a field trip over by where he was hunting, and he's like lying in a swamp trying to get everybody's attention. And they're like, ah, it's just frogs. The sound effect at the very beginning, there's a new, I don't know if you guys noticed, but there was the newspaper boy was throwing newspapers onto driveways, and the sound effect sounded like plastic hitting plastic. It did not sound like, it sounded nothing like a newspaper. So he goes hunting. It must be his first time hunting, and the hunting shop he goes to, the guy spits on some worm meat or worm dirt, spits on it, and wipes it on his jacket. I'm like, I would not be okay with that. Just a quick question: how was the archery in this movie?
I'm glad you asked. So the archery was fine. I believe he got shot in the midsection.
Was it the midsection? Okay,
yeah. But I want to point out that he was using broadheads. Those are designed to kill, not just like a fine point. You know, it's not like a target archery tip. So they're like a giant metal razor blade triangle. And when you shoot an arrow, the arrows are rotating in space before they hit their target. So when they enter the body, they're not entering in straight and staying straight. They're still twisted. So that way, if you try to pull it out, you're going to make an even bigger hole in your chest cavity. So I find it interesting that he survived this period. He should be dead. From where he was hit and what he was hit with. It was a good shot, though.
So you're saying Martin Mull probably shouldn't have been able to pull an arrow out and then travel for miles and miles over a course of several days, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And I don't understand the point of that even in the script. If he was the district attorney and he put some kid away into a mental institution for so many years, and his reason for killing him was revenge, just kill him and just write him out. And it wouldn't have had it even been Martin Mull. It could have been literally anybody. But the, you know, we meet this woman's or this girl's dad. He's going on a hunting trip. He gets mud smeared and spit smeared all over him.
Yeah.
And then he just gets killed. Done. Yeah.
I wonder how much Martin Mull made for that, made for this movie.
I don't know. It
probably was plenty.
Yeah.
I don't know. You probably don't know this, Ben, but Joe is a certified archery instructor. That's why I always refer to him whenever.
And a Iowa State record holder.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it you got a record for?
For outdoor archery in my age class.
Nice.
Nobody else in the state participated, but I got it.
That's
or something
awesome.
Like that. I had the best shot record. Anyway, best score.
Nice. Nice. That's not true. I'm sure there's other people who've been doing archery in your age bracket. This is the perviest school of all time. I mean, the adults in this school, they really need to go through some of the, professional development trainings that we have to go through on a yearly basis, because these people, this is one of the just grossest, pervious movies I've seen in a while, where the adults are just leering. You know, the principal has the main girl bending over in his office. It's so bizarre. And I don't think in 1989 this was something that people would have found like, no, that seems reasonable to me. It was a pretty bizarre way of doing things. At a certain point, they're at a hot dog stand, and the character Brian brings this girl a hot dog, and she's like, "How did you know I wanted that?" And he said, "You had that look." What does that mean? Is there a hot dog look? Brad Pitt does have a pretty sweet Mustang. I don't think that the 80s version of the Mustang was a great model of the history of the Mustang, but yeah, it's a pretty sweet little convertible. And the art class, it's just one teacher and coach after another was just so perverted and not even just like in a subtle way. It was just overt. I don't know if this was supposed to be funny or what, but it just was very strange. And then at a certain point, a kid just, there's like a jump scare of a kid on a big wheel or a tricycle or something like that. Very odd. Let's see. There's a flagpole kill. That's one I've never seen before. Or at least the way it was done. I'm not quite sure how you get the flagpole to stand up under a trampoline in order to be able to make it do that. But okay. And then, you know, we have a bit of a twist. I'm not sure the killer had the opportunity to kill the girl the night before and didn't. And I think that was only just a device to keep us guessing about or to make us think that Brad Pitt's the killer or something like that. I'm not exactly sure. But and then there's a big fight scene between the killer and Brad Pitt the girl's just standing there watching the whole thing. You know, there's two of you, and it's not like he has a gun or something like that. The two of you could probably take him, and Brad at least give Brad Pitt a bit of an advantage anyway. So this was my least favorite of the three. I didn't care for this one so much. But Catherine, what are your thoughts on Cutting Class?
I loved Martin Mull. I thought he was the best part of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that, you know, it starts off, we get to follow him. We like follow him on this camping trip. It's just it's so random and out of nowhere. But I love that we keep checking in on him. It's like it kind of wanted to be campy. Like that's the humor in this movie. Nothing else in this movie is funny. Every time that cuts to Martin Mull.
Yeah.
I definitely echo your sentiment about the teachers. I thought this was just out there, even for an 80s movie. I was like, this is a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Although I will say Paula does need to wear pants. Lots of wearing a really long t-shirt or short skirt. And
right.
I'm just like, you know, come on. Just
Yeah. It was very bizarre. I mean, you know, it's a horror trope, but it's usually between the teenagers or the college kids or whatever. Not it's with not the
adults. Yeah.
You don't have like Roddy McDowell.
Right.
Ogling.
Your 50-year-old teacher.
Yeah.
I did find it amusing during the basketball game. There was a giant sign in the gymnasium that said no food or drink in the gym right next to a Pepsi stand. And I thought Dwight's dad, Brad Pitt's dad, looks like Nick Nolte. I did think it could be fun. This could be a sequel. This could be the prequel to Return to Horror High. Maybe this is the massacre that they are trying to do the documentary about in Return to Horror High. And could so we be. Could connect it that way.
Yeah.
I liked this one. I don't know. This was probably my second favorite. I liked it better than Return to Horror High. At least it made more sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's your typical, you know, 80s slasher movie. It's fun. But just don't think about it too much.
Jill Sholin, I thought I liked her in this. She had her moments, and I do remember her from Popcorn.
Mm.
She was in that as well, and I thought she had her moments for sure. But
I thought the actors were pretty good.
Yeah, they were all. I mean, you know, it's hard to see Brad Pitt his performance in this, and then think, oh, he became this great actor, and he really has become a very good actor. You don't see, but you know, they're young, and they still had some growing to do. And I think that if she, you know, well, she was also in The Stepfather, I believe.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But and I think that, you know, it's too bad that she didn't get a chance, because I thought she's very pretty, and also I'd like, there's a quality to her. I thought was that was appealing. Ben, what are your thoughts on Cutting Class?
All right, so this was the film I hadn't seen, but I remember seeing it on all the streaming platforms and thought, oh, this would be a fun one to watch. I wanted it to lean into the black comedy that it was trying to do, like with the Martin Mull situation. Yeah. I felt like there were other moments that could have been, like with these sleazy teachers, I think there could have been some comedic moments, especially with the death sequences.
I think you're right. I think that, like, they were going so overboard with the perverted teachers and school staff that there, I did feel like there had to be a reason they were doing it. It couldn't just be because that they thought that was, I don't know what, you know, would be sexy or something like that. But but the comedy wasn't there. So it just came off as perverted. And it was like, this is really strange. It didn't work.
Right. I agree. And then I thought they missed a chance to kill off Roddy McDowell, because he survives in this movie. And I spoke to Catherine about this, because I like to sometimes rework scripts or rewrite scripts to see if it would work a little bit better. And I thought, because we catch him dressing up in the theater, that he could have had a whole sequence, sort of like a Shakespeare death of some sort in the theater. Because he should have got his comeuppance from what he was doing to all the kids in the school. We also don't see what happens to the science teacher, who was another figure who kind of just disappeared. But I thought he could have been found in like jars or something, cut up. I think my favorite that almost worked was the math teacher sequence, where the two of them, where he and the girl are kind of trapped in trying to have to figure out the math equation as to which door to go out of. I thought that was kind of clever. I thought it worked up until the point he opened the door, and I thought there needed to be a faster moment of that, because there was too much of a pause. So you were like, oh, everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I thought maybe instead of the axe, a shotgun would shoot directly at him when he opened the door. I loved the whole Martin Mull's character asking his daughter, you're not cutting class, are you? You're not cutting class. Like every moment he's like, you're not cutting class. Even at the very end, when we almost see them get killed at the very end because of the car going off the road. And he's like, you haven't cut class. I thought it would have been better and funnier if all three of them had been run over and crashed in the car. But Martin Mull was still alive and saying, I just hope you weren't cutting class. And then end the film that way. But, you know, some of the death scenes are really good. I like the trampoline sequence. I thought the Xerox machine sequence went on a little too long, but I liked that whole, like, just being smashed into and having it print out what's happening to the teacher, who, of course, was an awful vice principal as well. I think the big thing that really I wish had been fixed was with our killer, we kind of know who it is sort of because of the way he acts the entire film. Like, there's no point in which he feels like you would sympathize with him. Like, I never really sympathized with our main character because he always had this look of evil in his eyes or look of possession. And did I freeze?
Yeah. Oh, I think we lost Ben.
He froze.
Yeah, he froze. Sorry, Ben, if you if you're there, maybe exit out and then come back in. You froze up on us. Joe, what are your thoughts on Cutting Class?
I could vamp for a while. Let's start right at the beginning with Merton Mull. He's going on a hunting trip, and he walks into this little store, I'm assuming to find out, hey, it looks like Ben's back. All right.
There he is.
Ben, were you done? Did you have more you wanted to say?
I'm not sure what I ended up saying through that, but that was pretty much the end of what I was, my notes.
Okay. So when Merton Mull stops at this little roadside store to go in, there is literally no reason for him to bring his gun into the store. It's not even in a case. He just makes an effort, like a conscious, I'm going to turn around, I'm going to grab my gun. If you grab a gun and you walk into a store, you're an armed robber. Not, I don't care what store it is. It should be in a case. But that's just me.
Yeah.
I've never seen a death by kiln before. That was interesting. Kind of a dry heat.
That would not be a fun way to go. I have
no. No, no, it'd dry the daylights out of your skin. The first basketball scene. I want to reiterate your point. Brad Pitt went on to be a tremendous actor. I like Brad Pitt in 99.9% of things, but in this particular film, he is just a whiny crybaby.
Yeah.
And he can't play basketball for shit.
No, he can't. He can't dribble at all.
Those outfits, those uniforms, I'm sorry, that the team wore with him out there, I swear to God, I was waiting for him to turn into a wolf on that basketball court. That looked just like it was right out of Teen Wolf.
Yeah, it's true.
There's some tremendous Bill Shakespeare writing in this, because here's a direct quote. "I'd rather suck donkey dick." Thank you. That was a quote from this film. So the art class, I've been in quite a few of those figure drawing classes in my time, and never once have we ever even considered drawing a student.
Right.
That's like a no-no.
Or have the teacher say, watch how these muscles stretch across her back and feel her butt and everything. Yeah.
And you certainly don't
terrible
take another student of the opposite sex and pose them behind them in a precarious position either. That's just a flat out hell no. You don't do that.
Even in the 80s, we knew better than that.
Yeah. But here she is donning her all black one piece to go get drawn by her classmates. It's just weird. The janitor looks like he should have been cast in the Toxic Avenger. When Miss Knopf gets killed by having her face smashed into the Xerox machine over and over again, and every time it's producing another copy, I thought it was hilarious that the entire student body had their own copy, because they're at that PTA meeting or student rally or something. They're all like holding them up above their heads. Like, we saw, it was bizarre. You would think that would be evidence. Speaking of evidence, if there's in the photocopies, you can see the killer's hand and it's got a very specific ring on it. Where are the police? Why aren't the police taking these photocopies and saying, let's look for the guy with this ring on?
Yeah, they didn't pay attention to that. And it's pretty bumbling. It's pretty right there, you know. And the girl is the only one to notice that.
Right. Speaking of the girl, she really reminded me of Winona Ryder and Heathers.
Yeah.
In this particular film. Starring Christian Slater. That Heathers.
I liked him in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I wish Mark was here to do his impression, but unfortunately he's not.
I wish Mark had an impression. When he comes on for, you already recorded. Next time you have him on for whatever show he begs you to be a part of, and doesn't let up and makes you and just wears you down until you say, okay, Mark, yes, you can come back on, then ask him to do his Christian Slater impression. You'll be entertained big time.
Actually,
I will say that in the, Top Gun episode, we do have a Markism that I've heard on your podcast before, but you guys usually say it, but he said it. Shut up, Mark. He said it to himself.
He said it to himself.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's actually brilliant. Thanks, Mark.
Excellent.
Ben, I'm going to give you some sage advice. There's going to come a time where Mark is going to beg you to come on your show to do one of two movies. One is either going to be Heathers or the other one is going to be True Romance.
Yes.
True Romance is probably going to be at the top of that list.
He's mentioned True Romance, yes.
Yeah. Highly advise not doing that. Or it's going to be him doing his Christian Slater impression for the entire show.
Yeah, yeah. You won't get a word in edgewise.
No. And he knows every word.
Make sure Catherine's on there, too, at the same time. Maybe she can get him to shut up. She might be able to.
Rein him in a little.
Yeah, she's starting to join in on the fun a little bit, too.
So back to Cutting Class, there's a scene where Paula is running down the hall by herself and she's about to turn a corner and she runs into a teacher that says this exact phrase, Paula, this is a dangerous place for a girl like you. She's just running by herself in the high school.
It's school, but they've pretty much shown that that's the case, Joe.
I'm sorry. It is a dangerous for a pretty girl like you. Teachers shouldn't notice that they're pretty. Anyway, it was just weird. There's a good song in this. It's called Man Talk. The lyrics go, give me that man talk over and over again. It sounds like Devo, but I actually found out it's Andy Preboy, who was the lead singer of Wall of Voodoo, which you guys might know
song really?
Mexican Radio.
Mexican Radio.
Oh, whoa, whoa.
Wow. Give me that man talk.
Give me that man talk.
I couldn't tell what they were saying. I didn't realize that's what the line was.
Well, thank God for closed captioning.
Yeah.
During that fight scene at the end that went on just a little bit too long and Brad Pitt's head got stuck on a vise, when it was all done, did you guys notice that through most of that fight scene, the janitor, the creepy ass janitor, is just standing there watching?
Yeah. Yes.
And then he gives the line, I won't mind cleaning up after you, miss.
Yes.
That's just really, come on.
So bizarre.
I also want to point out for those of you that are Brooklyn Nine-Nine fans, the two bumbling cops, Hitchcock and Scully. Hitchcock is Dirk Blocker, who is also the coach who got impaled with the flagpole. So basically, in summarization of the plot of this film and to spoil the daylights out of it, the guy that everyone thought was the killer throughout the entire movie was actually the killer.
Yes.
That's as succinct as I can get.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they tried to throw you off a little bit with Brad Pitt at the end, but it was short lived. So, and it doesn't really work when the person you thought was the killer all along turns out to be the killer, even if you did do something to throw people off the scent. If it turns out being the one that was the most obvious from the beginning,
what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point?
It's my least favorite of the three, and unfortunately this is my second watch, but it was fine.
Is that everybody?
That's everybody.
That's everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun. There's a, I mean, I did enjoy watching these movies. It was, I'm always down to watch bad 80s horror movies. I'm always down for that. I love it. That is a, that is a genre of horror, or at least a time period of horror that I can always watch.
It's pizza.
Yeah.
It's 100%.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's yeah, exactly. Even when it's bad, it's good.
Pizza, it could be, or worse. Coffee. It could be bad 2000s horror.
Oh, well, there's plenty of that.
There's plenty of that. And Joe finds them.
I'll find them. I know where to Joe dig.
We'll find them.
Start heading to the aughts. Yep.
So our next episode is our next episode the decoration. Yeah. So we have a short film coming out in the fall, and it's going to be showing at Midsummer Scream on August 8th at the 4 p.m. time slot. So that is the 4 p.m. time slot. That's going to be Halloween themed movies, and our movie is Halloween themed. It is starring James Andrew Oster once again, Matt Bergenzine, who this is his debut with Cinescare Productions, and Ashish Samuel, who you will may remember from on Halloween night. He was in that, so he's in it, and my dog Nikita is in it. I'm in it. I have a little cameo. I play a character named Kowalski, who I think Joe said that's his favorite character. I have a little brief
celebrate
part.
His entire catalog. Yeah.
Anyway, at any rate, we will be talking to the cast of the decoration on the next episode. So no movies to watch between now and then, but we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about Midsummer Scream. Hopefully,
there's
we
one
might
movie
even
to watch.
What's that?
We should watch The Decoration.
Oh, I guess we could watch The Decoration. Yeah, that's true. But the audience won't be watching.
No, just
anything.
Us.
So yeah, yeah. So I guess that's it. So thank you so much, Ben, for joining us. Oh, what?
What's Ben? What do you got coming up on Real Beans?
Yeah, Real Beans.
So coming up is going to be, well, we've mentioned your episode with Raiders of the Lost Ark. That is going to be a really an exciting episode. And
which
then,
will actually be available when this comes out.
Okay.
When this episode comes out. So it should already be available.
Platforms. Yeah. And then after that, Mark returns with Catherine to discuss Top Gun. Oh. And as everyone's finding out that these two films... are films that I had never seen before, so it was fun for me to kind of just dive in and see something new that I probably should have seen a long ago, but better late than never.
And then, I've seen Top Gun either. It's not ringing a bell.
Yeah, what is Top Gun again?
Top
yeah.
Gun, some guy named Tom Cruise is in it. I don't know who he is.
Yeah, he's
something another with airplanes.
Yeah.
It's Airplane Mark, with Top Gun. Or Airplane Mark, with Tom Cruise.
Let you guys get anything, any word in edgewise, or did it kind of just become a Mark monologue?
Yeah, we were reining him in a little bit more this time.
Okay. So. All right. Yeah. Oh, I love it. I can't wait to listen to that, but I also can't wait. We had a great time talking to you about Raiders of the Lost Ark. That was a fun one. And Joe and I don't get to talk about those movies very much because Catherine too, but because we just do horror movies, but it was a welcome switch. So if we can come up with something, I think that, you know, we'd all like to talk about, I'd love to be back on the show again with Joe too.
Yeah. I would love to be back on the show with Joe too.
Yeah. With Joe. Joe wants to be back on the show with Joe. So everybody go to www.cinescarehorror.com and check out our merchandise. Also, check out our new database, IMBD, not DB, BD. We named it after Mark's mispronunciation, which he still, I don't think he...
Still doesn't I'm get not, it right, yeah.
I'm not sure that he sees the joke in it. Like,
no,
because
I don't
know
think
that,
he does.
I don't think he realizes he can't pronounce IMDB. He always pronounces it IMBD. which is now going to be confusing because RIMBD is copyrighted CineScare, and you know, but at any rate, it's always something with him. But yes, IMBD, check it out. Look at, if you want to know if we have talked about your favorite horror movie or a horror movie that you haven't seen, you want to hear more about, all you have to do is search that movie and it'll pop up with the episode, who talked about it. Sometimes it's more than one episode, right?
Like Yeah.
If I saw, let's say, I think Mark and I talked about Backrooms recently.
I was going to say Zombex, but yeah, Backrooms would be a good example.
Yeah, we saw that, and Joe and Catherine haven't had a chance to see it yet, so we talk about it on one episode, but when Joe and Catherine do get a chance to see it, we'll talk about it on that episode too, and then so it'll pop up every episode we talked about that movie. So Joe did the lion's share of the work. Catherine did a lot of work. I did a little work. Mark did literally zero work
jack
on
shit.
This thing.
Yeah.
Jack shit is the term. But it's something to behold, and it's a very convenient use of your time if you'd like to hear our quick review of, or any reviews of, a movie that you'd like to know more about or hear more about. So, all right.
And
well,
we're going to have to add Ben to the database now.
Oh yeah. Ben will be on the, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
That's a host, anybody that's been on the show, you get in the database.
Anybody who's on the show and talked about a movie, they are on the database. Yeah.
Nice. I'm honored.
The beta days. Actually, it's the beta days.
Sorry. Yeah. The beta days. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I guess that is it for this time. So we will see. I'm trying to stall while I find the. There it is. We will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good Friday.
Night.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us.
There was a shark.
Little pig, let me come in.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Spin the wheel, Shannon. Polynesian carpentry.